Thanks for listening to Schlereth and Evans On Demand. Did you know you can listen to us on Alexa? Enable our skill today, then say, Alexa, play 104.3 The Fan.
Welcome to it, everybody. Thursday morning. Mark, I call this a, it's dank out. It's dank. Doesn't this feel dank?
Does,
dreary, but dank.
It does feel that way.
It's dank. I just like saying dank. It's dank.
You like that word, do you?
You're a dank.
Please stop.
Dank.
Dank.
It is dreary. It is just gloomy. But I like this kind of day. It's supposed to warm up a little bit today. What happened?
It's supposed to be nice this weekend.
Spring has not sprung, Mike.
No.
It has not sprung.
No.
It has been strange, to say the least.
Do not throw the, well, we need the moisture. We've got enough moisture right now. We're good. We're good.
All right.
Need some sunshine.
Super moist.
Things are moist around here.
Yeah.
Super moist.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of moistness going around.
Yeah.
All right.
It...
What, did you just go quagmire on me?
Giggity. All right.
Oh, that felt good.
Okay.
All right. And with that, we are we're rolling, everybody. All right. So you were off yesterday. We're really getting into the whole Chris Harris thing. The idea that the two sides are working on basically a one-year deal for 2019, which would make him among the highest paid cornerbacks in the NFL. But that's it. I mean, no talk of an extension. It's basically just a one-year proposition. Are you okay with that? My feeling is, you know, if the Broncos can get anybody who's over 30 on a year-to-year type basis, I think that's great for them. My question is, why would Chris Harris basically accept a franchise tag deal when all I'm told by players and ex-players is that nobody likes the franchise tag?
Right. Well, I think it says one thing about the Denver Broncos. They're ready to part ways. I mean, they'll give him the 1 year deal because they know they need him, but they're, you know, I mean, I think some things have changed based upon who you've got as the head coach, the defensive quote unquote coordinator, head coach / coordinator. I know Ed Donatell's the coordinator, but and based on the system that they play, they're not going to value the cornerback position as highly in the future. So does it tell you you want younger guys, or does it tell you you want to go in a different direction, or, you know, you think that Chris Harris Jr.'s best days are behind him? A one-year deal signifies to me, hey, we're going to pay you this one-year franchise deal. Thanks for your service. You know, it's all hunky-dory. We're going to make sure you're happy, but you're not going to be here after next year.
But why even do it in the first place? Why basically double his salary?
Because he's not going to play otherwise.
Is he?
Yeah.
You really think he'd sit out? You think he would
100%
bypass 10 weeks of game checks?
100%.
Mm.
100%. Bypass him, stay healthy, don't risk injury, come back for the last 8 weeks, practice for a couple weeks, get yourself healthy, you're in the last 6 weeks, your Broncos teams probably aren't very good at that point. Yes, absolutely, I think
very few guys do that, you know. I mean, Le'Veon Bell did it, but...
Sure.
Right now, he still exists as the outlier.
There's a few guys who have done it before him, but you're correct. Not a whole lot of guys do it. And frankly, most teams come up with some type of, here's some bonus money. I mean, didn't he redo his deal a little bit last year to get some easily earned incentives? So, you know, there's a lot of teams that do it. And I get it from the team standpoint, Mike. Team standpoint is saying, hey, man, you know, we're going to kind of transition into a different style of defense. We're not going to play as much man coverage. We're going to play a little bit more zone stuff. We're going to, you know, we've got another slot corner that we went out and got, and we paid the slot guy. You're an older player. You know, we're going to give you that 1 year kind of deal that we can manage cap wise, but, But, you know, we still have other work to do. Offensively, we've got more work to do. We've got some other positions that we want to address next offseason as we continue to build this thing. Yeah. I mean.
And why not trade him now? Get something for him. Instead of letting him walk after next year and getting one of those, you know.
Compensatory picks
that, you know, who knows where that shows up.
Well, I mean, I think it has to do with, Mike, what are you going to get? What kind of value are you getting in return? I mean, you're not getting a Khalil Mack deal for Chris Harris Jr. I mean, you think what value draft pick do you think you would get? You may get more in compensatory pick from Chris Harris Jr. than you would get right now in the open market.
Really? So let's say a compensatory pick would be at the end of the third round or end of the fourth round.
I would say it's probably with his career credibility, third rounder.
So end of the third round. You don't think you can get an early third rounder? You don't think you get a second rounder for Chris Harris?
Second rounder right now that's going to be drafted next year versus get a year's worth of work out of him and still get a third rounder?
I see what you're saying. Okay.
Like where's the value in that?
All right, the weight.
Because
okay.
I certainly don't think anybody's giving up a first rounder for Chris Harris Jr.
No.
At 30 years old.
No.
They covet those picks too much. Yeah, you're right. You may get a late second rounder for him. But I think the value, the need outweighs the difference between end of the second round or end of the third round.
Okay. Does this move speak to the idea that the Broncos are all in for this season? And is that something that encourages you? Or is that a mistake being made by the Broncos? We'll tackle that. Coming up next.
This is Steve.
Hi.
Steve loves manila folders.
It's true.
That's why he started a company supplying manila folders to large corporations.
In both white and eggshell.
What Steve doesn't love is spending time paying suppliers and browsing for loans. Luckily, First Bank offers time-saving treasury management tools and business loans, so you can spend more time with your passion, even if it's manila folders.
In both white and eggshell.
Okay, Steve. First Bank. Business banking for good. Member FDIC. Go to efirstbank.com/business for more details.
This old Chris Harris story, the negotiations, the idea that two sides could be working on basically a one-year monster deal, and then after that, Chris Harris could be on his way somewhere else. It speaks to the idea, Mark. I think it sort of encapsulizes the whole view of what people have for what this season's going to be about, starting with the Broncos, and that is... Is it all about trying to win this year, or is it a team, forget about what they say, still believes that they're in rebuilding mode? And I was listening, I was driving around yesterday, and I was listening to Stokely and Zach, and all of a sudden, you know, these two don't get heated at each other very much, but they were going back and forth, and if you listen closely, I thought Stoke had a little bit of an edge.
John just wants to get back. Head above the water.
Oh, my goodness.
That's it, huh?
I mean...
You think John Elway is going to be okay with 8-8? Missing the playoffs for a fourth
deep down,
straight year?
Deep down, I mean, will you be all right? I think he takes a deep breath and is like, whew, hey, I'm glad we didn't get our tail kicked all year and we weren't 6-10 again. At least we didn't have a losing season.
Stoke, I'm telling you right now, if you think that is the truth, and let's just say it is, how far the mighty have fallen. And how the expectations around here have been watered down.
Have you seen it the
down.
Last couple years?
I
Zach.
Have.
Okay.
I have.
It's been awful.
But we've made wholesale changes. New coach, new OC, new DC, new
so
QB.
Because
new
you make changes, all of a sudden you think it just happens overnight and all of a sudden you're going to be a 10-win football team? That's not the way it usually works.
Well, I'm talking about what John's aspirations are. John's aspirations aren't to fist bump under the table going 8-8.
I understand that, Zach, but I'm just telling you, I mean, I don't think he's going to come out and say it was a successful season, but I think deep down, you know, it's like, okay, we can take a deep breath. This team's heading in the right direction. We're not a losing football team anymore. We can continue to build. Like, we're doing things right now. That's what I'm saying here.
Do you hear that? Do you hear that? I understand that, Zach. Boy, DeHuff, what did Stokely sound like to you?
He sounded like a raging Cajun right there. He was hotter than a red pepper. Boy, I hope his best friend Peyton Manning wasn't listening.
Why?
Why? The more they go 8-8, the better Peyton looks.
Yeah. It's good for Peyton.
Good point.
I think he had a moment where he kind of almost tapped Zach on the head, right? Like little patted him on the head a little bit. Like, it's okay, little fella. It's going to be okay.
I understand what you're saying, Zach.
So let me ask you this.
You think he's right?
Do you side on the side of where Stokely sits, or do you kind of bristle your backbone a little bit and, kind of like Zach, challenge him?
I can't believe that John would be happy with 8-8. I can't. I think with the draft that they had last year, how they feel about this draft, the idea that the boogeyman is gone, Vance Joseph is gone, that they're going to be much better coached this year.
Mm-hmm.
I think 8-8 would be a disappointment. I think if they go 9-7, and if they were to miss the playoffs, I still think he would be like, all right, we're back trending in the right direction. But you make all these changes, new coaching staff, new quarterback.
Right.
What you think are back-to-back strong draft classes, and you improve from 6 wins to 8 wins.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's enough. What about you?
I tend to agree with Stokely. Not that you would ever say, yes, 8-8, way to go, guys. But you've had, what, three losing seasons in a row?
Two.
You went
9-7.
Yeah, 9-7.
And then,
well, I guess four non-playoff.
Right. They are one of 8 teams in the NFL right now that qualify to be in a playoff drought 3 years or more.
Right. Okay. So 4 years without the playoffs and 2 back-to-back losing seasons. Again, I think this goes to the way, not that you would ever sit there, Mike, and say, oh yeah, 8-8 is what we're striving for, guys. We've made improvement. We're on the, you know, not that you would ever have that. You'd be in your press conference. This is not good enough. We need to be better, blah, 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 all these things. But again, it goes into how you look at this team when you went in. I mean, you don't make wholesale changes everywhere if you do not believe. I mean, think wholesale changes on the O-line, tight end position with the draft. Okay. What are you going to do with your wide receiver position? Wholesale changes, your offensive coordinator, your head coach, your defensive coordinator, wholesale changes across the board, Mike, everywhere. Like everywhere, there are a bunch of changes. That does not say, hey, we're competing for the playoffs. That says, hey, we've got to fix a bunch of things around here, and we're in rebuilding mode, even though you don't want to say rebuilding mode.
All right, put the new coaches aside for a second. Just the notion of this Chris Harris deal. It speaks to an all or nothing 1 year, go for it type move. The Joe Flacco contract is set so that after this year, you don't owe him any kind of guaranteed money.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that you back that up by drafting a quarterback in the second round that most people had you linked to in the first round at number 10 overall speaks to somebody who looks at his situation as, hey, I'm going to try to maximize this year, but if it doesn't work out, I'm ready to turn the page. I'm ready to turn the page on Chris Harris. I'm ready to turn the page on Joe Flacco.
I think you and I look at that differently. I think turn the page or max out this year is all about, hey, let's continue to build our roster, continue to build our young guys, and try to be competitive this year. The way you frame that Zach would frame that to me sounds like pie in the sky, orange colored glasses, Bronco fan. Now we're back at 11 wins.
I didn't hear him say 11. He just said no way 8-8. So
right, but I'm just saying what it sounds like is here we come. You know, now we're on our way. We got Flacco, and you know, we get Chris Harris back, and we're gonna, you know, we're gonna win the division. I mean, I still think you're a ways out, and obviously you want to be competitive. Obviously you want to be headed in the right direction as you're developing a younger core of players. And you've done that through the draft the last couple of years. You still know that whether it's Deshaun Hamilton, whether it's Cortland Sutton, you know, Noah Fant, who you just got, you still have some young offensive linemen that you're still trying to develop a bunch of players. That to me, says, hey, we're rebuilding and we put a couple of veterans in there to kind of calm the storm, so to speak, and to be competitive. But that doesn't say to me, hey, we're ready to win the division.
Well, here's where I would disagree with you, because he has started to turn over this roster. It is a much younger roster. But just because the roster is getting younger, all you have to do is look at how he's handling the quarterback position. If he thought this was a team that was in rebuild mode, he would have either A, drafted a quarterback last year, one of the Hall of Fame five, or he wouldn't have drafted Drew Lock in the second round this year. He would have taken a quarterback last year, or he would have taken a quarterback at number 10 this year. Instead, he went with Case Keenum last year. He goes with Joe Flacco this year. I mean, you can say all you want about what he's doing with the rest of the roster, but if he's going veteran at the most important position on your team, most important position in sports, that speaks to a guy that's not quite ready to dive into the rebuilding pool.
It says to me, no, see, that's not what it says to me. It says to me that I am rebuilding, but I want stability at this position so that we are competitive and we're not 5-11 again. I want to rebuild why I still have a chance to be 8-8, 9-7 and everybody is looking at us as from a positive standpoint.
Yeah, but if you're in rebuilding mode, you don't care about trying to be competitive. You're just, if anything, you're doing what a lot of teams do in pro sports. You're kind of tanking without admitting you're tanking so you get in the position to get the best possible players.
I don't believe, the best possible players, we're talking about the NFL draft, Mike, where it's a 50-50 crapshoot. So, like, John knows that better than anybody. You think John has seen, how many first rounders do you think John has seen over the course of his 17-year career, and then is his career as a general manager that haven't panned out? I can name a few. Paxton Lynch. Smear campaign continues. See how I just slipped that in there.
Day number 917.
Just that easy. So, I mean, he's seen plenty of guys over the course of his career that didn't pan out. I mean, and that's probably why he didn't go that direction last year at number 5 overall, because he didn't like those quarterbacks. He is trying to build right now with really good football players, and while he's building the roster and retooling the roster because of 5 really bad drafts in a row, while he's doing those things, he's still trying to be competitive. That's John.
Coming up, The Morning Brew, a story about a coach who some people think looks like me, who's upset at a recording music megastar. That's next.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents Schlereth and Evans.
Good morning.
Morning.
It's time for your morning brew.
Things are going to get weird.
You're going to keep like me, and you're going to crap thunder.
Okay, this guy needs coffee and cooler stuff.
Know what can really help you sort through these important issues?
What?
Orange Mocha Frappuccino!
Damn, Jimmy. This is some serious gourmet
Let's get it on.
This ball's well struck to center field. On the move is Marte. Look it up. That's the Daniel Murphy swing we know. 3-run first inning jack.
AT&T Sportsnet there with the highlight as the Rockies make it back-to-back wins in Pittsburgh, winning 9-3. There was a lot to like about the performance yesterday. 16 hits, guys up and down the lineup with multiple knocks. But for me, the biggest development was the mercurial up and down. John Gray was up. He was on yesterday. 7 innings, 3 runs, struck out 7. And he ends a streak in which in 3 of his previous 4 starts, he had given up 5 runs. Mark, before the season began, I said John Gray was going to be the X factor for this team being able to win the National League West. He needs to get going, and his outings are even more important with the struggles of Kyle Freeland.
Well, they certainly are, and he actually pitched pretty well. He left one changeup up, 87 miles an hour up in the middle of the plate that got crushed. Josh Bell hit it into the Allegheny, as a matter of fact. So, but other than that, he pitched really well. He was on 98 miles an hour, painting the black. I, you know, you're 100% correct, especially with Freeland struggling. Marquez is pretty solid every time he goes out. I mean, he's going to battle at the very least. He's going to eat up some innings. But it's important to get depth. It's important to get length from your starting pitching. And we saw John Gray be pretty good. Like I said, he had the hiccup. What was it? In the second or third inning, he had the hiccup where he gave up the home run. He gave up the two runs there and then later on in the game. But beyond that, I thought he was solid throughout that start seven innings. So, yeah, 100% agree with you. John Gray's still a huge key to this team kind of getting back on track. I think they're 9.5 games out or 8.5 games out, Mike. So they got a lot of work to do right now.
Next on the Morning Brew.
There's certainly no place for fans and whatever it is exactly that Drake is for the Toronto Raptors, you know, to be on the court. You know, there's boundaries and lines for a reason. And like I said, the league is usually pretty good about being on top of stuff like that.
Props to Bucks coach Mike Budenholzer, who some people believe I look like. I don't see it. But props to him for calling out the annoying Drake, Toronto Raptors superfan Drake. Did you see him the other day? Just like he thought he was on stage. I mean, he was out of his seat. He was sitting courtside. He's moving around. He's up and down. He's cheering. He's waving. You would have thought that he was coaching some celebrity all-star game at All-Star Weekend or something like that. Sit down. I mean, I don't mind you being a fan, stand up, but he was like, he acted like he owned that sideline, that it was his. Sit down.
Does Spike Lee get up and coach the team and do all that stuff when he's sitting courtside of the Knicks? Drake drives me crazy. Plus, Drake is a fan. He's like super fan of every team. The worst thing you can be is have the, Jake, you want to talk about Jinxie Cat. Drake is Jinxie Cat. Every time he starts rooting for a team or puts the team's jersey on, don't they lose?
Like, I have no problem with being a passionate fan, but the way he acts...
He's not a passionate fan. He's a front runner.
He just wants to be seen. All that was. He just wanted to be seen. Look at me.
He needs to write a song called Moth.
Moth?
Yeah. You know, you flip on the porch light and all the moths hover around it. Like, he just likes the light of the camera. He's a Drake, the Moth.
New song. His next album, The Moth. That's good. I like that one, Mark. That's not bad. Next on the Morning Brew.
Let me start this off by saying I like and respect Kevin Durant and am not trying to continue a Twitter beef with him. However, he did challenge my credibility and I must respond to that. In my telephone, I have more than 60 direct messages from Kevin Durant on Twitter and Instagram since February of 2018. These were conversations initiated by KD himself. For those of you who want me to publish these DMs, it's not going to happen. Out of respect for KD, those texts will remain private.
Oh, snap.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Broussard, your cohort at FS1.
Yeah.
So he sent out a tweet saying, KD and I have a love-hate relationship. We've texted for 2 to 3 hours straight about life, basketball, media, faith. KD has gone at me much harder privately. And Durant responded, cap, 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 cap. You don't have my number, man. To which you just heard Broussard's response.
Right.
So, who do you believe?
Oh, there's... KD had burner accounts. He had fake Twitter accounts. He's uber-sensitive guy. And there's no question that Chris Broussard is one of the most stand-up, one of the most credible insiders in all the game. You don't have my number yet, but if we're sharing DMs because you follow me on Twitter and you follow me on, that's what Broussard is saying is, hey, what the difference? But I'm texting on a DM. It's private between you and I. I'm texting on a DM Twitter. It's private between you and I. What the hell? There's no real difference there, Mike. We're still having a private conversation over text. It's just a text through an app. KD is like that dude is way too for being a superstar. You know the old saying that wolves don't concern themselves with the opinion of sheep. You think Michael Jordan gives a rip about stuff like that? KD, you want to talk about sensitive, dude? Grow up.
Yeah, that's why we'd never fit in on this show, because we're the Wolf Pack.
We are the Wolf Pack.
We are the Wolf Pack.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Yeah. KD, don't bring that weak sauce around here.
Because we don't concern ourselves with the opinions of radio sheep, D-Mac. Speaking of which, next on The Morning Brew.
I mean, I want to be a Cowboy forever. I think the people that are doing the deal feel the same way. So to me, it's no rush. I know I'll get done. But as far as the numbers concerned, my focus is in the locker room. I know I'll get taken care of, so it is what it is.
So I said that purposely just to lead into the story. So Dak Prescott has submitted in the back-and-forth negotiations between he and the Cowboys a counterproposal that calls for him to get paid $30 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I like Dak Prescott. I would love to see him get, on one hand, I'd love to see him get that kind of contract because he was drafted when?
Fourth round.
He's a khaki pants quarterback.
Right.
Oh, I would love to see a khaki pants quarterback get $30 million a year. That said, I think he's a good quarterback. He's not a $30 million a year quarterback. Are you kidding me?
Yeah,
he's good. He's not elite.
No, no. He's in whatever that next tier of quarterbacks is. That's kind of where he stands. All right, so there's elite tier. Mm-hmm. Then there's tier one.
Yeah.
Then there's probably the Prescott tier after that.
There's elite.
Then
tier one. Tier one. And then tier two.
Like elite.
I think he's in tier two.
Yeah, tier two. Yeah. Like elite would be like the Rodgers and the Brady. And then you flop down to the Matt Ryans of the world, things like that.
And then
you go to the next, they're good.
Correct.
Right.
Correct. But not $30 million a year good.
No.
No.
Cause tier one is, you know, knocking on the door. Like someone knocking on the door.
Knock on wood.
Somebody ringing the bell. Someone knocking on the door. Somebody ringing the bell. Do him a favor. Throw a touchdown. Then let him in, you know, like that.
That'll do it for The Morning Brew. Bring that to you each and every morning at 6:30. Coming up next, our very own 1043thefan.com, James Merrillat, has written something that I absolutely, unequivocally disagree with 100%. I'll tell you what that is next.
Sports Radio 1043 The Fan presents Schlereth and Evans.
Make sure you check out what we have going on at 1043thefan.com. All kinds of great digital content, videos, columns, blogs. And leading the charge.
Blogs is that's your thing,
that's
right?
That's not my thing. I write columns. Other people write blogs. Leading the way is our very own James Merrillat, who we're pumped to have as part of the station now. And James joins us now. James, good morning.
Morning, fellas.
All right, let's start right with what you wrote about the other day. You believe that the Nuggets are going to be active this offseason, going after a big fish, whereas you believe the Avalanche are content to stand pat and let their extended youth movement continue. Why?
Well, I'm just going off of what each of the men leading the charge for each franchise told us. I mean, Joe Sakic in his press conference after the season essentially said, you know, we'll look at guys, but if the right person's not there, you know, we're not going to do anything. It's kind of like when you ask your parents, hey, can we go to Disney World? And they say, yeah, we'll think about that. I mean, they mean, no, we're not going to go to Disney World. That's basically what Joe Sakic told us. And then Jim Connolly the other day kind of laid down the gauntlet, essentially challenging any free agents, big name free agents in the NBA, saying, hey, if you want to win, come here. And he's right. I mean, if you're one of those guys that, if you're Kawhi Leonard or even Kevin Durant, who wants to prove that he can win, you know, not being a part of the Golden State dynasty, the Nuggets are the perfect opportunity. They're a very good team. They've got a good young core, but they're not championship ready at the moment. So you wouldn't be just, jumping on the bandwagon and riding their coattails. So I'm just going based on what Tim Connolly and what Joe Sakic told us. One of us said they're going to be active. One of them said they're not. Plus, I think that Joe Sakic knows, hey, we don't necessarily need to spend big to compete for a championship. If you get in the tournament in the NHL, you got a shot. And Tim Connolly knows, hey, as we're currently constructed, we're going to be an entertaining basketball team and we're going to make the playoffs, but we're not championship caliber. So I think they both know kind of what they need in order to get to that next level.
Yeah, you know, I tend to agree with you, and I tend to agree with the premise of young with the Avalanche. We've seen it. We've seen, you know, them grab a guy that was in the college Frozen Four and comes in and you know, and plays great throughout the hockey playoffs here, and it was a big contributor. So I mean, we've seen that before. I think we've also seen kind of the exposure of if you can't compete backcourt-wise with the rest of the elite NBA teams, you can't win a championship here. And I think we saw that get exposed that way as well. And that, to me, is kind of where they are, James, with the Nuggets, anyhow, is they have got to increase their backcourt. They have got to get kind of a professional scorer, if you will, somebody they can rely on in that regard. Is that kind of how you read what Conley said?
Yeah, no doubt. And I think Game 7 against Portland was kind of a microcosm of that. Granted, it was a game where, you know, Jamal Murray struggled mightily and, you know, nobody could throw it in the ocean, but it just came back to that situation we've seen with the Nuggets seemingly forever where, you know, in a big game or late in the game, who's the guy that's going to be able to score? Jokic has developed into a consistent offensive option, but who's that outside guy that they can get him the basketball and he can make something happen? They just don't have that guy where you look at, you know, Portland had it with Dame and with McCollum. Obviously the Warriors have it with about four guys. You know, the teams that are left right now, Greek Freak in Milwaukee, Kawhi Leonard in Toronto, they all have that guy. That one additional scorer is what the Nuggets are missing.
All right, James Merrilett from 1043thefan.com joining us. I disagree with both of you. I don't think you're giving Joe Sakic enough credit. Look, when the Quebec Nordiques came to Denver, they had a young core that included the likes of Joe Sakic and Peter Forsberg and Adam Foote and Adam Deadmarsh, the core that would go on to win a Stanley Cup. But what did the Avalanche do to put together the most complete Stanley Cup winning roster? They traded for Patrick Waugh. They acquired Rob Blake. They acquired the Messiah, Ray Bourque. Joe saw all that firsthand, James, so he knows from his own experience as a player, no matter how good your young core is, you still have to be willing to go out and add those pieces to put you over the top.
Yeah, it's a different day and age of the NHL and certainly a different day and age of the Avalanche, too. That was the open checkbook Pierre Lacroix days where they would go spend money and bring in guys. I just look at this roster too, Mike, and I'm trying to figure out where are they going to go spend big. I don't think they're going to want to break up that top line, so I have a hard time believing they're going to go spend $10 million to bring in somebody that's going to play on the second line. They've got four relatively expensive defensemen, and that's where Makar is coming in, and I think they're going to convince themselves, well, he's our big addition on that end of the ice. And then, you know, Grubauer was the big change that they made to sort of get out of that funk in mid-March, and I think they think they've got the situation solved in net. So I just don't know where they look at it and go, well, here's our big missing piece. Here's the position that if we just had that, we would be over the top, so let's go spend $10 million. I just think they're going to find convenient ways to talk themselves out of it. I'm not saying a piece or two wouldn't help. Of course it would. Any team, if you add talent to the roster, you're going to be better for the most part. I just think there are convenient ways for the Avs to talk themselves out of it.
James, where do you weigh in on this whole Chris Harris Jr. debate, the one-year deal? Is that an in-it-to-win-it deal? Is that like, hey, we're pushing for the playoffs this year as we're, you know, building the core of our young roster for the Broncos? Or is this kind of just a, hey, thanks for all you've done for the last couple of years. Here's a one-year deal on your way out of town.
You know, I looked at it initially, and I kind of feel like it's giving Vic Fangio a nine-game test, right? I think they play nine games before their bye week. And it's, hey, we're going to give you Flacco, we're going to give you Chris Harris Jr., and if we're in it at the bye, well, then, you know, we're going to see what we can do in 2019. If not, it's rebuild time. We're playing Drew Locke. Chris Harris Jr. is going to walk after the season. Wouldn't be surprised if prior to 2020, other big names, Derek Wolfe, you name it, are sent packing. So it's almost like a nine-week test for Vic Fangio to see if it's going to be part of a rebuild or we're going to try and win now. I just, initially when I heard it, I'm like, oh, that makes some sense. It's good for both sides. But from a negotiation standpoint, I don't get how this makes any sense for the Broncos. Like, what are they getting in return? They already have Chris Harris Jr. locked down for this year. He's under contract. They're just going to give him $7 million or $6 million or whatever it turns out to be so he can be happier. They're not getting anything in addition, so John Elway, who's been a very hard-nosed, shrewd negotiator, he's tried to do it with Demarius and with Vaughn Miller. Heck, he asked Peyton Manning to take a pay cut for crying out loud. All of a sudden, he's just now Santa Claus, and he's just giving away millions of dollars. I just don't understand it from a negotiating standpoint, how it works for the Broncos.
All right, you can check out all of James Merrillat's content at 1043thefan.com. There's just a little taste. Thank you, James.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks, guys.
All right, James Merrillat. You're going to clear the air coming up next. About this whole,
yes,
you already told me about it, so yeah. I'm not like, you know, giving you an assignment. You already told me about this, so I just want to get it out there that you're gonna tell us why signing Chris Harris to a 1 year deal and playing Santa Claus for Chris Harris makes sense. Mark clears the air next.